This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
The Torah says, the Kohen Gadol says, Master, may Eit Hadat B'nai Yisrael Yikach Shnei Seirei Yizim L'Chatat. And from the community of the B'nai Yisrael, he must take two he-goats as a sin offering, as a chatat, v'ayel echad l'olah, and one ram as an olah. V'ikrib Aaron et para chatat asher lo, and Aaron must bring the ox, which he has as a chatat, he must bring it as a sacrifice, v'chiper ba'ado v'ad beto, thereby atoning for himself and his immediate family. This is all done very beautifully in the Musaf of Yom Kippur, if you remember, the different stages of Kapora. V'lakach et shnei asirin, then he takes the two goats, v'hemid otam b'fnei Hashem, and he puts them in front of Hashem, petach ohel moed, in front of the ohel moed. V'natan Aaron al shnei asirin goralot, and Aaron then draws lots for each of the goats. Goral echad la Hashem, one lot for Hashem, v'goral echad la Azazel, and one goes to Azazel. The word Azazel comes from two words, Az and Azal, the place where goats go, goat land. So one goes to Hashem and one goes to goat land. So that would be the most accurate translation of Azazel, which means out into the open. They go out of the urban, out of the urban areas, to the places where goats freely roam. That's basically, then it goes into the details of that service. This is one of the weirdest of all the korbanos in the sefer, in the Torah. The Ramban goes as far as to say, it's not the Ramban, one of the Mefoshim goes as far as to say, is it almost looks goyish. Doesn't look Jewish if you look at the what we're doing over here. It's foreign to every concept of Torah. Let's try and understand a little bit of what it's about. If you remember last Shavuot, I gave a shiur on Megillas Ruth, on the concept of why it was necessary for Ruth to dress up as a prostitute in order to attract Boaz. Would it have been sufficient for her to go along? And they explained to Boaz that he had a chiyuv of Yibum. And we discussed that concept as it expressed itself in all of the family of David HaMelech, starting from Lot and Yehuda with Tamar, and David himself with Bathsheba. All of them, there seems to have been a lot of the intersexual relationships seem to have bordered on the immoral. It's not quite kosher. And we discussed then a very strange concept, which we've developed a little bit since then, which is that this world is not a perfect world. It's not a world of perfection. And the world therefore doesn't tolerate perfection. Anything which is perfect doesn't work. The reason it's not a world of perfection is very simple, because the Ribbono Shel Olam put us here to achieve. And you can't achieve in a world of perfection. It is perfect already. So it was necessary, in order to fulfill the requirements of what we're put here to do, it was necessary to create this world imperfect. And once the world is imperfect, perfection can't be tolerated. You can't get away with always being perfect, always being absolutely straight and absolutely rounded off. And we discussed the concept then of having to almost bribe the sotan. I don't remember whether we actually used that phrase then, but one of them, Foshim on Ruth, does almost use that phrase. And he says, if you remember, that sometimes a thing can be too sweet and you've got to put a little bit of salt or lemon in it to take away a bit of the sweetness. You can't take it so sweet. Although sweet is good and everybody likes sweet things, there's such a thing as being too sweet. So perfection is good and everybody likes perfection, but there's such a thing as being too perfect, and one has to sometimes detract a little bit from the perfection. And one has to, so to say, pay off the sultan, give him, let him feel involved, let him feel that he's got part to do with the whole thing, otherwise he interferes. And one of the Mefoshim at the time, in fact, brought the Chazal, who talks about the fact that the Talmid Chacham's clothes often get torn. And there's a medrash about that's really the Sultan clawing at him. It's all sorts of, the Sultan doesn't like perfection. That's what comes out clearly. Here, too, you have such a concept lying at the source of this concept of the Goral La'azazel, giving one away. Almost to the Sultan, giving one korban, one of the Zirim goes to Hashem, and one of the Zirim goes La'azazel, which some interpret as meaning also for the soul, for that part of existence which is bad and which is evil and so on, to appease him, to make him feel that somehow he's also involved, and to leave the Jews alone. It's very strange. It doesn't make much sense. That's the point at which the Poshim say that it's almost Goyish. It's not Jewish to divide it into good and evil, and one goes to evil and one goes to good, and that they should get equal shares even. The Ribbono Shel'olam and Azazel get the same share. Doesn't sound right. So we've got to understand it a little bit better. The Klei Yochur refers us back to a similar type of thing. Although the word Seir isn't used there, the Gedi is used. The Seir is a goat and the Gedi is also a goat. And it was, it says, until that when Yitzchak became old and his eyes were becoming weak, and he called Esav his older son, Vayomer Elav Beni, and he said to him, my son, Vayomer Elav Ineni, and he said, here I am. Ve'atana sana chelecha tzelicha ve'kashtecha, now get hold of your hunting equipment, but say asadeh betzudali tzayet, and go out into the field and hunt for me some good food. Aseli matamim, and make me some tasty food, kasher ahavti, like you know I like. Avia li va'achel, and bring it to me and I'll eat it. Va'avut va'arechecha nafshi b'teyem amut, with my soul can bless you before I die. Rivka overhears this, calls Yaakov and tells him what she heard. Va'atav v'nishma b'kudim, she says, namas, and listen to me. Nasher ani b'tzavatach, what I'm about to tell you. Lechna latzon, go to the flocks. Va'kachli misham shnei g'deye izim tovim, and take from there two goats. I'll cook them and prepare them the way he likes it to be. I can do it as well as Esau, and you'll go and get the bracha. Asks Rashi, was that Yitzchak's normal lunch? Two goats? It's quite a lot of food. What's wrong with one goat? Ela ha'echad ikriv lepesach. Ela pesach hayo, that's what Rashi, it was Pesach. Ha'echad ikriv lepesach, one was a korban pesach. And with one he made tasty food. Now think back to the shir I gave on Esav 1.5 years ago. That was last time we did Brashis. What was Yaakov's idea, Yitzhak's idea originally, when he sent Esav to go and get him an animal from the field? Was that for the Korban Pesach? Couldn't have been. For the Korban Pesach is a domestic animal. I don't know why it's a gedi, why here they're bringing a goat, if the Torah says that the Korban Pesach should be a sheep, should be a lamb. But whatever the reason for that is, it certainly can't be wild back and things. And when he tells Esav, he tells him to get him one. He doesn't so that he's tired, go and hunt for me. He doesn't mention anything about two. Whereas Rivka prepares two separate gedim for him. So one must say that it was his original intention to give Yaakov the job of preparing the korban pesach, and to give Esav the job of preparing the tasty food. Why the two things separate? Because it was at that time, don't forget, Yitzchak's idea that the Am Yisrael would consist of two complementary parts, the Esav part and the Yaakov part, and they would work together. And Esav was the Gashmistic man, Esav was the man who looked after the material needs of Am Yisrael, and Yaakov was the Ishtam Yeshevu'al, and he was the Talmid Chacham who used to sit and learn. And the two of them would work together. In that case, Yitzchak wanted to see that each of them had their part in the future of Israel. He wanted to bless both of them. To bless Yaakov would be no problem. Yaakov would bring in the Korban Pesach. But Esav also had to receive some kind of blessing, so he gave him the job of getting a particularly tasty dish. And that's why he stresses, make me a dish just like I like it. Because the Korban Pesach, you can't do that with the Korban Pesach. You have to prepare the Torah so that it's prepared. It's straightforward. See, it's roast, and that's it. And if you don't like roast, it's too bad. Obviously, Yitzchak had some specific taste. And he said to Esav, apart from the Korban Pesach, which I have to eat as a mitzvah, I would also like the food that I like to eat, the taste that containing the taste that I enjoy, and you, that's your job to look after that. It's your job to look after the material needs of Yisrael. It's your job to look after my material needs, and that's the bracha I'll give you. I'll respond to you for having looked after my material needs. Yaakov comes along and steals the bracha from Esav. Why does he do it? Because Esav has already sold his birthright. His macharet b'chorato has already sold his birthright. That means that right to be a partner with Am Yisrael and Avodas Hashem, that right to complement the rest of Yisrael in their service of Hashem and to look after the material needs of Yisrael, which was his birthright, that is given up already, his sacrifice. And the moment he gave it up, you'll remember, Al-Kain Karashimo Edom. Therefore they started calling him Edom because he gave up that birthright. What does that mean? Esav represented, if you remember that shir, the essence of Esav was Tzayid Befiv. He knew how to hunt him. Rashi brought the Medrash that said that means he knew how to manipulate people with his mouth. He knew how to hunt with his mouth. He knew how to achieve using all sorts of skillful and deceptive methods. What was his part in Klal Yisrael? As we said, the world is not a perfect world. If the world was a perfect world, you could get up and talk the truth and everybody would listen. But the world isn't a perfect world. You've got to talk a bit of... you've got to sell yourself. You've got to sell what you're trying to sell. You've got to persuade people to believe in what you're suggesting, no matter how good and true it is. People aren't attracted to perfection. They aren't attracted to goodness. They're attracted to good salesmanship. That's what the Olam is, and that was going to be Esav's job. Esav was going to use his tzayid, his ability to hunt, to be makariv people, to bring people to Yiddishkeit, to look after the business interests of Am Yisrael, to look after the political interests of Am Yisrael, so that not to contaminate Yaakov with that kind of dealing. That was the idea. Yaakov could be tummy, could be perfect, not in any way involved in the, so to say, dishonesty, or in the tastes of them, in the little implied dishonesty of salesmanship. Yaakov was to be free from that. That was going to be Esav's speciality. If you have such a speciality and you're subjected to Torah, that's okay. That's fine. You'll survive well. But if you have such a speciality and you're then subjected to Torah, then you become Edom. Edom is red. And red is the constellation of Mars. It's talked about Ma'adim. It's always talked about as the constellation which affects violence in the world. Red is the representation of violence. Edom. Therefore they called him Edom. The moment he gave up his birthright, he didn't give up his talents. He still had the talents of Tzayed Befid. He still had the ability to hunt, the ability to be diplomatic and to be political and to be deceptive and to be a good salesman. That ability, unless it's absolutely subjected to Torah, results in Edom, results in violence. That's what violence is. It's Tzayed without Torah. So Esav's in trouble. Esav's going to be a cruel man. Yaakov's going to look after them both. And you remember that we talked about the fact that this is the first time that Yaakov is really deceptive. Afterwards, if Laban, he learns how to be deceptive again. He fools Laban. He's the Yaakov, the Ishtam, is the biggest con man in the whole of the Torah. The man who really has everyone around his little finger. And he gets in. This is the first time he did it. And you see how it goes against his grain over here. And he argues with his mother, how can I do it? And maybe the father will find out and this and that. It's not right, it's not good, whatever it is. My mother says, don't worry, that's what you've got to do. And you remember at the Shia then, 1.5 years ago, we talked about Yaakov's. We suggested that Yitzchak knew exactly what it was. Yitzchak realized very quickly when he called him close to smell him and to feel him and everything. Yitzchak realized exactly what had happened. And one sees also from the type of brocha he gave to Yaakov. And when Yitzchak declares, HaKol Kol Yaakov HaYadayim Yidei Esav, that the voice is the voice of Yaakov and the hands are the hands of Esav, he's not saying, I don't know what's going on. He says, I do know what's going on. I'm dealing with a new man. He's not a Yaakov and he's not an Esav. His call, his voice, his pnimius, the inside of him is Yaakov. He has all the perfection, all the tmimus, all the straightforwardness of a Yaakov. But Yadayim Yidei Esav, he's also learned how to handle the world. He's also become a man who knows how to manipulate. He's become a man who knows how to hunt. He's become a man who knows how to be diplomatic and how to sell himself. Such a man needs a special bracha. He's going to be the salvation of Klal Yisrael. Yaakov immediately realizes that Esav has no place in Am Yisrael and that he'd been mistaken all the time. Yitzchak realizes he'd been mistaken all the time that Yaakov is the total fulfillment of Am Yisrael and gives all his brothers to Yaakov. That's why when Esav comes along and he says, isn't there any bracha left for me? And Yitzchak says, no. I gave it all away. I had reserved one for you. But when this new man came to me who was a combination of Yaakov and Esav, I realized that Esav has no plot to play in Am Yisrael anymore. So Esav presses, he says, something, give me something. So what does he tell him? Achal b'chatzichin. You're going to live by your sword. You've given up. Once your ability of tzayid is no longer subjected to Torah, to Yaakov, then achal b'chatzichin. All I can tell you is you should be a successful villain. That's all, because a villain you'll be. So be successful, that's all I can tell you. But your salvation will be in subjecting yourself to your brother. That's the only way you can be saved, otherwise you're going to be a robber. The two Gedeim, the two goats, which Yaakov brings to Yitzchak, is a statement to Yitzchak, I'm going to handle both. Although you always thought that I was the Ishtam Yosheva Alim, that I was the man who sits in the tent and learns and that's it, and we'll leave all the salesmanship to Esav, and all the diplomacy to Esav, you've now got to know that I'm going to bring you not only the Korban Pesach, but I'm going to bring you the Matamim as well. I'm going to look after you. If you have special material tastes and needs, I, Yisrael, will look after our own material needs. We don't need Esav. We don't need Esav for the Korban Pesach, and we don't need Esav for the Matamim. We can do it all ourselves. That's it. Later then, Yaakov flees. He goes off to Laban. he comes back and he reunites with his brother. You remember the whole scene of his brother. And then his brother tries to persuade him to come back to his homeland. Yaakov says no. And when the Torah describes they're splitting up, the Torah says the following. Vayashov bayom hahu Esav ledarko. And that day, Esav returns on his way, Seira, to Seir. Now we know where the Seir is. What a goat is. Esav is the goat. Let's understand that a little bit better. Esav's name is Edom, and his name is Seir. He lives in the area of Seir. And don't forget, he's described as soon as he's born, completely covered with sar, with hair. There's a connection between all these. We defined the concept of Esav, if you remember, as the external manipulation of the world. The hair of an animal has many functions. One thing is for sure, it's the most chitzoniistic part of the animal. It's the most external part of the animal. It's the animal you see superficially. But more important than that, possibly the most important part of one of the most important aspects of an animal's hair is camouflage. If you look at a leopard, what strikes you? Incredible chokhmah in making the leopard invisible to enable him to hunt. So you've got the hair, which is a very passive part of the animal. He doesn't use it, you know, his paws he uses, and his eyes he uses, and his mouth he uses. The hair is what enables him to act in the world. Without that, he'll be wiped out. That's it. It's the hair which enables him to deceive the rest of the world that he's not where he is. That's what it is. The hair is really the most dishonest part of the animal. Everything else he does straightforward and honest. But the use of his hair is dishonest. That's the way he hides himself. That's what Sayyid is. Sayyid is Sayyid Bafir, the hunter. The ability to hide, to be skillful, to diplomatic, salesmanship, make things look what they're not and are what they are, and make them not look like what they are. This ability to handle the world and to fool the world where necessary is the ability of Sayyid. If that ability is used for Torah, it's okay. If it's used correctly. If it's used independent of Torah, it results in Edom. It results in cruelty and in violence. Esav returns that day to Seir. Doesn't stay with Israel. He goes to that part that lives that way. Arab land, places of that place. The people who live on their cunning. That's where Esav returned to, and turned down the opportunity to come back into Israel. Or rather, it was Yaakov who made it quite clear that he doesn't want him. But the point is, the Torah makes quite clear at this point that Esav and Yaakov finally part, and they don't meet again ever. It's the last time that Esav and Yaakov have anything to do with each other directly. The Ramban in fact says, before that, there's one other place where Seir, still before that, sorry, the next place where Seir becomes important in the Torah, where is that? The brothers of Yosef, when they wanted to deceive their father about the fact that Yosef had been eaten up, they dipped his goat into the blood of the Seir. Rashi says because the blood of a Seir looks like the blood of a human being. Whatever it is, it's interesting that they use the Seir again to fool somebody. Cunning Seir. The next place that a Seir becomes important is Korban Chatos. Remember that there are four Korban Chatos. The one is brought by a king who misleads the people, who paskins the din incorrectly. The second is brought by a Sanhedrin who paskins the din incorrectly. The third is brought by a Nossi who acts incorrectly, a king or a leader who does something wrong, and the fourth is by a private person who does something wrong. The first two are not Seir, only the last two are Seir, because the first two are not for an action done wrong. The Seir is the man who acts, the Seir is the ace of the expression of oneself in the world, the manipulation of the world, where an action has been performed incorrectly, and a chatas is only for action. Chatas is not for a bad thought or for not doing what you should have done. Chatas is only for incorrectly doing something you shouldn't have done. Action, physical action in the world. The first Korban Chatas is not physical action, it's a wrong psak. The second Korban Chatas is not physical action, it's a wrong psak. Therefore the Seir doesn't play a part there. The last two, which is a king doing something wrong or the people doing something wrong, that's an action which is incorrect. Seir Chatas. Further on in today's Seder, the word Seir is also mentioned. It says, "V'lo yizbechu odet zitchehem la'seirim asherhem zonim achareim." This whole parasha is so that the Jews should not continue to bring sacrifices to seirim, which they flirt with. There should be a firm established principle forever and ever, for the older generations. What does it mean, the Se'irim that they used to bring sacrifices to? It says, Rashi L'Shedim, for ghosts. Now the strange thing is that the Ramban goes into many pages of discussion of the concept of a shade, of a ghost. And if the Ramban does it, then it's not something one can just say, Shedim. Firstly, it's brought in the Gemara, but there are many funny things brought in the Gemara, but the Ramban brings it and is prepared to discuss it openly. One can't even relegate it to the areas of Kabbalah that we know nothing about and shouldn't know anything about, because the Ramban, when he doesn't want you to know, he tells it. Hamevin Yovin, he says, if you're clever, you'll understand, or it's not necessary to explain to wise people. He has many phrases of politely refusing to go any further. But when he willingly goes into detailed explanation, it means it's something that he wants us to know. Now, I'm not going to go into the whole thing that the Ramban discusses there, but what's important is a medrash, which I've only seen quoted, I haven't seen it in the original, where the Rabbi Benayo says in the medrash that, so one thing that the Ramban does say is, he says a human being is created of four elements. You know, the Torah divides all matter into four elements: fire, water, air, and earth. That's it. Those are the four basic elements into which everything else can be divided. Fire being energy, air being gas, water being liquid, earth being solid. He says the Shadim are made, we are made out of all four. He says the Shadim are made only out of fire and air, gas and energy. Rabbi Benayo says that the Ribbono Shel Olam was just busy making these people, and he started them, and he established their nefesh, he established their soul, which is the fire and air, the energy and gas, that's the, not the soul, neshama, but the life force of the being, and he didn't manage to finish them by the time Shabbos came in. It's time for Shabbos, he had to stop, and he left them incomplete. That's who the Shadim are. And the Gemara goes into quite a lot of detail with the Shadim. The Gemara calls them mazikim, they're harmful beings in some way or another, which we don't understand. They can reveal themselves, one can see them, and it's very difficult to distinguish them from human beings when one sees them. And the Gemara gives tests as to how you can. If he disappears in a double reflection, you have to hold up two mirrors to see him. In one mirror, that he can still be a shade. But if you hold up a reflection of a reflection, if you reflect him off two reflectors and you can still see him, then the Gemara says you sure he's a human being and he's not a shade. But if you can't, then he's a shade. So you see that he's a being. Sorry?
But he gets hang around.
So we... So we see that there's such a funny concept, an incomplete being, and that is the Tzairim. One sees here a little bit too, whatever, I don't want to go into the whole concept of the shading, but a shade is incompleteness in a human being, which is what Esav is again. Esav on his own is Esav. Esav on his own is harmful, he's dangerous. He has to form part of another people, and he has to operate together. On his own is incomplete. In fact, what a shade really is, you know, sometimes one sees people, I've often seen people that I've been wanting to get a, not often, I've seen a couple of times, people that I've attacked wanted to get 2 mirrors to do a quick test on. You know, you're somehow looking at them and you don't feel there's anyone there. You know, you're talking and they're usually very congenial people, they say yes to everything you say, and they just, I don't know, you're just, it's a funny feeling. There's no personality there, there's no mamoshes there, you don't know. You feel that you're not speaking to anyone or anything. It's a very strange feeling when it does happen. And there was one visiting from overseas here just a few weeks ago. Trying to get him into a position of double mirrors, really difficult. I couldn't do it. But that's the kind of thing that you have. What is a shade? He's someone that you can see. It's total externalism. Externalism to the point that there's not even matter there. You can only see him. There's nothing beyond that. That's exactly what a seer is. That's exactly what I said. Total externalism. There's nothing whatever beyond it. It's just a shell, it's just the framework, and inside their framework there has to be content, and if there's no content inside the framework, then there's cruelty, there's Edom. Let's have a look and see now with these two Seirim that we bring. This Esav concept is dangerous. The danger is the question of ends justifying the means. How far can you become an Esav if it's for the sake of Torah? That's it. Because what did we say? That an Esav operating on his own is dangerous. But if the Esav is committed to Torah, he's okay. So how far can you be a little bit dishonest, a little bit not straightforward, a little bit scheming in the name of Torah and for the sake of Torah? How far can you do it? Once a year we clarify this. That's a Yom Kippur. We take the two Seirim. one of the concepts that comes out of the two Seirim is that it's really one Seir. There must be no difference between them other than the lots. And it's purely by chance. What's the concept of lots, of drawing lots? Why don't we decide this one will be La Hashem and this one will be La Azazel? We want to, really, if we could, we would have divided one Seir into two. But that's impossible, to divide one Seir into two and to still leave it living. So we take two identical ones and we show it's purely by chance. This one La Hashem and this one La Azazel, or the other way around, would make no difference. All we want to show you is that there are two ways a Seir can go and only two ways a Seir can go. If you want the Seir to live independently, then outside. Not for Torah, not anywhere. It must go to Azazel. It must go to Goatland, which is really the place where Esav went. It must go to the place for goats, not for human beings. If you want the Seir to operate within Torah, then you've got to be prepared to shecht it. Not that you have to shecht it. We only do this once a year. We do it on Yom Kippur. What's the idea of Yom Kippur? On Yom Kippur we do something which appears a little bit goyish on the surface. We don't eat. We don't engage in any kind of pleasure, any kind of hedonistic or physical pleasure, whatever. The whole idea is to act like angels. Well, acting like angels is not a Jewish idea. It's a non-Jewish idea of a tzaddik, a man who doesn't have any pleasure and doesn't involve himself in the world and all that. It's not a Jewish idea of tzidkus, of righteousness. So Yom Kippur is one day of the year when we have to do, as the Mefarshim say, something which borders on being not Jewish. Yeah, once a year we take that Seir and Meshecht it, and we check to see whether we can live without it. Can you manage without the Seir or not? If you can manage without the Seir, you're okay. If you can't, you're in trouble. What does that mean? Sure, the ideal would have been for Esav to handle the Seir side of Jewish affairs. Esav should have been the politician, they should have established the Knesset, they should be running the country, they should be engaging in foreign affairs, they should be the Gaboyim and the Shuls, they should be the newspaper editors. That's what one should organize. Should be Esav doing that, and Yaakov should learn and teach, and they should be the Rabbonim and they should be the teachers of Klal Yisrael and so on. That's what it should be. But for reasons, whatever they were, in Bereshis, that didn't happen, and Yaakov had to do the lot. Now the danger is that we begin to enjoy this role of Esav. Take it good. You can live comfortably. As Yaakov, where do you get an income from? But as Esav, you can make money as well. It's possible. You're working for Torah and you're making money. And Yaakov is a very stereotype sort of life. You know, sitting in the shiva all day. Not so difficult, not so easy, but Esav, you travel around, you go overseas, you work, you meet people, you do all sorts of fancy things, you manipulate, you organize. It's good, you're feeling good. When the Mishnah says that the way to learn Torah is pat b'melach tochal, a little bit of eat bread and salt, v'mayim b'meshuru tishten, you drink just a little bit of water, v'al ha'aretz tishten, and you sleep on the ground. We've always said, that doesn't mean that's how you've got to learn. There are many people who learn well not doing it that way. But you've got to be prepared to learn that way. If that's the only way you can learn, you've got to know that without any question you will do it. That's what we're trying to establish here. Are you prepared to shecht your Seir or not? We need the Seir. Sure, we need the Seir. The Am Yisrael can't survive without it. But if you want to admit it into the Beis HaMikdash, you've got to shecht it. So if you want to be part of the Beis HaMikdash, you've got to know at least that King Yom Kippur you're prepared to shecht it. And at least one day in the year, you're prepared to say to yourself, I don't need it, I don't want it, it's unfortunate that I've got to have it. But really, if the only way I can learn Torah is by dropping the Seir altogether, I'm prepared to do that. That's really the lesson of Yom Kippur. That's the thing that comes out of Yom Kippur. And here we do it. In front of Klal Yisrael, they see. The only way the Seir can survive is outside. If you want the Seir to exist as an independent value, if you want the concept of politics, of manipulation, of business, of commerce, to exist as an independent value, outside of Klal Yisrael. If you want to subject it to Torah, that's fine. But you've got to suggest it to Torah to the point that if there's ever a clash between the Seir and between Torah, if there's ever a clash between politics and manipulation and business on the one hand and Torah on the one hand, you've got to know without any question the Seir gets shechted and you go into the Beis HaMikdash. That's it. That's it. That makes the parasha a little bit more sensible to us. And I must tell you, what I've really done is simply given you enough background to understand the first half of the Ramban on this. So Ibn Ezra says a strange thing. He says that there are great secrets involved over here, and when you're 33 years old, he'll tell you what these secrets are all about. So since I'm not 33 years old, I didn't ask the Ibn Ezra, I went to the Ramban. And the Ramban says the following. The Yenei says, Rabbi Eliezer, that's the Ibn Ezra, Ne'eman Ruach, is a man of wonderful spiritual stature, which is a lot for the Ramban to say about anybody. Mefaseh Dover, he said, he's hiding things away here, but I, the and the Seir will bear on him the Esav. That's Esav. Shenemar hein Esav achi ish Seir. It says, my brother is a hairy man. It's called Avonotam, it's all their sins. Avonot Tam. The Avonot, the sins of Tam, of the perfect one. Shenemar v'Yakov ish Tam, as it says, Yakov's a perfect man. That's the midrash that he brings, and he builds up a bit of a parish on that, which now makes sense in terms of what we've discussed. That the whole subject of the Seirim is a necessary result of Yaakov taking over the role of Esav, and it's necessary to clarify for oneself that not only must the Seir be subjected to Yaakov, not only must the material side of and the active side of world affairs be subjected to Torah, but that one has to have very clear to oneself at all times that the moment there's any kind of a conflict, the Seir gets shechted and we manage without it. That perhaps is one of the things that resulted from the Holocaust. It was basically being prepared to sacrifice anything. You know, the old question that the non-religious people ask of these cowardly Jews, why didn't they fight back during those last minutes and at least kill a few Nazis, and they just went like sheep to their slaughter, and it's never going to happen again now that we have an army in Israel. And that's all a lot of nonsense. It was a time to understand that the Seir has to be shechted. It was a time to understand that there's no place for politics or for warfare or for murdering or for self-defense or for anything else. It was a time that they decided that the Seir has to be shechted. That's it. That's they began to concentrate those last minutes of their life on saying Ani Ma'amir and saying Shema Yisrael and doing what Yaakov would do, not what Esav would do. There comes times in everybody's life when one has to do that. Major decisions once or twice in a person's life, minor decisions every day of a person's life. And one has to remember how to handle them.